Blog Talk Radio.
This is Renegade Broadcasting.
Welcome to the Blitzkrieg broadcast. This is your host, Kyle Hunt, coming to you this January 3rd of 2014. Really appreciate you being here with me at the one and only RenegadeBroadcasting.com. As always, please check out the other hosts on this network. A lot of fine people here doing shows. And a lot has been going on, a lot of great shows, and a lot of updates. I guess to start off with, it has been announced that Mike is back. He's still doing shows. He was on with Keith last night from Truth Militia, and they're also starting to do shows again. Other news, Siegfried is on hiatus. He has decided that he needs to take some time off to focus on other things, and he's a bit frustrated with our larger network, I'd say, and perhaps our smaller one as well. But he actually will be my guest tonight, so we'll get into a bit of that later. We'll get to that later. All the other drama from 2013 and the end of the year there, we'll leave in 2014, and this 2014 will focus primarily on the 14 words. So with Siegfried gone in that Tuesday slot, it will be a wild card day yet again. And I do love those wild card shows. So this coming week, you can check out on Monday, Andrew and Jason with White Eagle Radio. And then on Tuesday, we'll be having Sid hosting a wild card show. Sid called into the stream on New Year's. And I guess had a lot of interesting things to say, but there's a little bit of time that's missing from that recording. Thanks to Bob in D.C. for getting the last 4 hours when he was on the air. Really appreciate him doing that so we can have that audio for you all. On Wednesdays, Dana Antiochus, Imperium Europa. Of course, Thursday, Mike Sledge. Friday, myself. Saturday, the Roundtable. And Sunday, the Aryan Women's Show with Hex and Sinead. Always fascinating material by everyone. Some news also to bring up is that there is a new fundraising drive on the right sidebar by the chat. You'll be able to find this fundraising drive and just click on the picture up there or the title, and you'll be able to donate to our production of many large banners that read diversity, in quotation marks, equals white genocide, which will be shipped out to people around the country for them to display at the White Man March. And because they're going to be displaying these banners legally, they're going to have them around for some time so they can be reused. So this is a continued investment in our future. We may require the people ordering the banners to pay a nominal shipping fee, maybe something like $8.88, to make sure that it's real people dedicated to this cause, and also to defray the cost of shipping. We're fundraising for the production of these banners, and if we have anything left over, we'll make more and also pay for the shipping. But if we didn't have some kind of hurdle for people to go over and just ship them out free like the stickers, you could probably understand how some Antifa or SPLC operatives could take advantage of that system, and our banners would never get seen, as they would be in the wrong hands. And we don't want them being taken by the police, as recently happened in Knoxville, when there was a banner hung up that read diversity, in quotation marks, is a code word for white genocide. So check with your local laws. And you don't always need to hang these things up. You can also hold them. And when people passing by see attractive, hopefully, people with these banners, it sends an even more powerful message. So that's about it for at least the time being. Just check out our different affiliated networks, and you'll find out what's going on otherwise. AlternativeSocial.com, RenegadeTribune.com, WhiteManMarch.com, of course, NationalProtectionism.com, which Mike and I need to get rolling again in a more serious way. We haven't updated that in a little while, but we've got things going on everywhere. AryanWomen.com. Really appreciate everybody who's involved with those different sites. Before I bring Siegfried on, I'm going to play a short song here. This is from Siegfried, Act 1. This is the Forging song. So this is Siegfried from Wagner's opera singing here. To the Blitzkrieg broadcast. With me is Siegfried. Siegfried, welcome to the show.
Hello, Kyle. Thank you for having me on. Hello, audience. Thank you for listening.
You're quite welcome. I appreciate you being here with me. You were my first guest on the Blitzkrieg broadcast, and that was the first show of the year in 2013. So even though you didn't have a show with us at that time, you're still affiliated with the network. And I thought it was appropriate to have you back here as the first show of 2014 and to see what's up with you and your thoughts and ideas for how we move forward in 2014. Now, Siegfried, I wanted to actually do this show as something of a real interview with you. We've done a variety of shows together, whether it's the round tables or the Sieg Kyle shows, or the we did a show with Sinead, Revolting Youth.
Yep.
A lot of different work throughout the course of Renegade Broadcasting's history. Mm-hmm. But people don't necessarily know your whole story. They know that you're from the magical land of Long Island.
Yeah.
That you used to be something of, you were kind of like Robbie Legend in your youth, at least
sort
in your way of thinking.
Yes.
And you rejected this system and the idea that you need to be improving your resume to get ahead in this world, mm-hmm, instead of fighting against the cultural Marxism and general decay of Western civilization, and putting a stop to the endless hordes of non-white immigrants and right. their brutality and abuse. But what was it that originally got you into this this way of thinking, this this way of seeing the world, your world view? And then what caused you to get in touch with Rich and Keith at Truth Militia and take one of the time slots there for your very own show, which was Call of the Ancestors?
Right. Well, first of all, thank you for that, and thank you for giving me this opportunity for this so far. Having all those Fridays to get on there and do my own thing, and I just want to thank you and Mike and everybody for listening for this whole time, and I really didn't take the time last Tuesday to really say that, so thank you, Kyle, seriously. But
more than welcome.
Yes, thank you. And, well, to answer your question, it's a myriad of things. It's really my own birth, my blood, my family's history, and the fact that they had to. Now, let me explain something here. Where my maternal relatives come from? They come from Swabia, Schwaben in German, and then Upper Silesia, Oberschlesien, which is out in the east. So these two very different German locales. And now we can be sure that the Upper Silesian relatives of mine and the kinsmen of my own and elsewhere in the old German lands out in the east there, those people were probably not treated very well by the Soviet invaders. So this is something that over the course of 10, 15 years, just simply meditating upon, got me more and more angry. And once I realized the destruction that was wrought upon those people just in that one war has not been rectified. Just that fact alone has gotten me so angry, so pent up with rage that the way to lash out and express it would be through the culture war, through seeking an end to this cultural Marxism that was the end goal of the Jews all along, because cultural Marxism was not in place until well into the 60s. You know, America was still a conservative place, if you want to describe it like that, until about the 60s, like I said. Here's the thing, like you were describing me before, my sympathies were quite different, if not the complete opposite. And while I did have those opinions, there was something in my soul, in my spirit, or however you want to put it, my brain, my mind, I don't know where it was coming from, my genes, but there was something within myself that was saying, no, this is not right. This is not going along and honoring your ancestors whatsoever. And that is, again, cultural Marxism, the worship of mediocrity and everything different and everything that goes against the grain and just worshiping degeneracy.
Well, yeah, what they have in place for us is very superficial.
Yes.
All of their different constructs. Whereas race, which is not a social construct, race, our genes, our inheritance from all those who came before, this is something very, very deep and something that can't be altered so easily through just simple means of propaganda and reinforcement and conditioning. It is effective with quite a few people, but still, there's something within them often that says, you know what, perhaps all this anti-white media is bullshit. I don't feel like
right.
a bad person. I know a lot of great people out there. Why do they want to kill us all? What is it? You know, I understand the arguments for white guilt, but these people are starting to get it. And it's also because our people are... yes, naive, but somewhat smart. They are an intelligent people, and you
yes.
can only pull the wool over their eyes for so long. And I do see things have been improving, and it's because people have been speaking out, such as yourself. So can you tell us about the time when you started your show on Truth Militia, and perhaps relate to any interesting anecdotes about your different guests there, or different shows and interactions you were on with Terrible Tommy Metzger? You ended up on a network with Terrible Tommy, and this was, you know, just getting into this kind of radio that you were doing there. You you had Glenn Miller on your show one time, right? It was
yes, I did.
You've had a very interesting short career in this kind of radio.
Yeah, allow me to try to at least preface this with something you were just touching upon. What I was thinking, that is, aligning myself with cultural Marxism consciously, that it was just that, consciously. I worked at it. I worked at my own sympathies, my own behavior, my own mind to be culturally Marxist, in a way, if you want to call it that. I claimed many terms myself, don't get me wrong, anarcho-capitalist and anarcho-communist and all these ridiculous hyphenated terms that are just so they're just garbage. I mean, these are the type of things that I labeled myself with, but all in all, they were all culturally Marxist. It was all aligned and within Holocaustianity. Now, what I'm really trying to say here is that I did that consciously, that I was consciously culturally Marxist, and I recognized it, and I'm ashamed of it. And it was really a dark time in my life, and it was a really pointless time in my life. But that's besides the point. Now, let's talk about the radio experience I've had. Now, I think I've mentioned this. I'm repeating myself, I feel like, from last year. Now, I remember, I can't remember if I remarked this, brought this to light, but I remember speaking to John Friend, a long time ago now. It's about a year ago, right? Talking to him, and he's saying, oh, have you ever heard of Mammy's Shit? And I said, Mammy's Shit? Doesn't sound like a great website at all, but I'm like, okay, I'll check it out. And all these sites on there, and then I'm featured on there. And now, am I shit? Is that what I am now? And it's this creepy, strange nexus of enlightened yet still mired in Trutha movement BS sort of individuals and personalities featured on there. And now there's this sort of, and there's something I've elaborated on my own shows, that is this kosher, anti-kosher movement. You know, I could lump in a few people with that, name names, but I don't deem it necessary. If people want me to,
the content of it was kind of like Oracle Broadcasting, where there were some people who were getting close to the truth, putting out some really good shows. And then there was also a lot of the patriotard conspiracy crap that distracts from the really important issues.
Right, exactly. And and all the while as well, they were all playing 70s glam metal while I was playing Vivaldi and Bach. And many of the listeners probably didn't have any idea who they were, or even heard those pieces of music before. And I found that very troubling and very non-Aryan. And, here's something else I just want to say. I was very aware of this information for a very long time, but like I said, I worked at my own self and said, no, thinking along the lines of, say, a National Socialist in the 30s, a pan-racialist in the 40s. Oh, gods forbid. And I really worked at myself to forbid my own thinking. So I was aware of this information. I was aware of many of these personalities. But then once I cut out that thinking myself, I strayed away from it, even paying attention to it on the internet. So I missed out on a lot of this stuff. I did not keep up with the goings-on of many of these personalities who are still around. And then I come back, and it's all just a big, I mean, there's all these factions, and there's all these talking points that just never end, and it's just really pointless. And that's not to say a lot of them aren't doing good work otherwise. It seems really silly, some of the topics some of these people cover. But, you know, let me now, I guess, answer your question about what was going on with me before I called Truth Militia. Now, can you just once more repeat the question, because I'm not sure.
Oh, well,
sorry.
I had asked previously about how you had gotten in touch with Rich and Keith and first decided to do the show, and then if there were any interesting stories from your time on the network.
Okay, right. Well, that was in my last semester in this big, big, big university here on Long Island. And I was studying history, and no doubt I would be one in my more innocent days to be, oh, German history, German modern history. This can't be harmful at all. This will be just only interesting. And I, despite the professor's name being Korean, I did take the class, the series of classes that she taught. I guess you could say that that's what she did. And I took those classes, and wow, they were chock full of programming and chock full of total lies and offensive ones at that. And she would speak with a very thick accent, and barely any of the white students would take her seriously, yet I was the one really trying to make sense of what she was saying and take it seriously. So all of that was going on in my life. So then I ended up saying to myself, once I really saw past it all, I said, no, I can't do this anymore. I can't just sit here and smile and wave my race goodbye while I'm in these schools, and I'm really doing that to my own ancestors. It's not right at all. There's no justification at all. It's suicide. It's racial suicide. I'm not going to be a part of it. That's why I wanted to do something, because I knew I could, and I knew I should, so I did. And that's really why I got involved in the first place. And this is not for some flaccid ideals of personal glory. That's ridiculous. This is all about the race. I only have the race in my mind all day, every day. Okay? Now, interesting stories, being on the radio. Well, we've gotten some trolls here and there calling in, and that was never fun, because it's just like, you know, I'd rather have someone call in who really disagrees, like really disagrees, like whether they be a full-fledged communist or some, some left-wing Strasserite, whatever.
Exactly.
Call in. I want you to, and that shows me that you're healthy enough to have a critical thinking mind and be able to muster the courage to speak out against me. Because listen to me, folks. Before I got on, I was just listening to Kyle. I was listening to Mike at Oracle, and I was saying to myself, "Wow, these guys really know what they're talking about. This is a whole other world. I would never be a part of it. I never ever thought I would." And to think, if I was still just a listener, and I don't mean to denigrate you if you're a listener, okay? I'm not trying to denigrate you, okay? I would never dare to do that, okay? If I was just a listener, though, and I heard this Siegfried guy, some young Long Island man, I mean, I would not respect him at all. I mean, I don't know what the hell. Who let this freak on the radio? And I would be calling in and trying to chide him and vet him as the best of my ability. And you know, I didn't experience any of that, much to my own discontent, to be honest. But at the same time, it was nice to receive all the accolades and the respect I got. So that's really the prime part of the experience that I can really relate to you. It wasn't really bad in the most part. There were, like I said, there were trolls here and there and critics. but never anyone serious enough to really go out of their way to email me or contact me some other way, which I would be fine with. Meet up with me in person. That's fine with me. Go ahead, do it.
You know,
I never got anything that.
I agree with you totally. I really enjoy open discourse with people who disagree with me and are willing to talk about it. That's why I really actually enjoyed going on that Bob Tuscan show, dealing with Bob and his views and then the
right.
callers. I think that's very healthy. That to do that kind of promotion for our race in such venues and just get that kind of dialogue going. I like to have real opposition, not these anti-fascists out in the streets with their different slogans. And it's yeah. never about actually conversing with these guys. They're absolutely unreasonable. You can't even talk to them. And the same thing with the trolls. They're jokes. They're all jokes. We haven't faced any real opposition. Now, we've had some, I'd say, infiltrators and perhaps
yes.
even paid trolls, professional trolls, and other sorts of campaigns that were launched against us. But we haven't had any real open discourse with opposition, I'd say. They just shut us
yeah.
down. For example, when Dana called in to Tom Hartman on Russia Today,
yeah,
just shut it down. They're
of
not
course.
Willing to talk about this. They're not willing to talk to us. Now, what I found also pretty interesting about this whole renegade broadcasting experience is that though some people will promote us, we have been somewhat blackballed out
yeah.
there as well. I saw this list of top 35 pro-white sites. And on that list, you'll find things like racistjokes.com and things that aren't necessarily pro-white, just anti-non-white, anti-other. And yet, I guess because – maybe it's because Renegade Broadcasting doesn't love Jesus that we don't get included in being pro-white. But
right.
I thought that was something of an oversight because if people check out the Alexa rankings, Renegade Broadcasting is doing – better than ever, actually. And a lot of our traffic actually goes to Blog Talk Radio. So we're not doing nearly as well as we could be doing. And also people re-upload the shows to YouTube and the rest. But the point is that we have been doing good work here. There have been a lot of people who have wanted to disrupt that. And it's really hard to deal with all these different personalities out there, whether it's chatters, callers,
yeah.
The various people that surround this type of media. It's really hard to deal with all sorts of different people and their different views and what should be tolerated, what shouldn't be. And you just mentioned the amount of degeneracy that sometimes goes on in the,
yeah.
in the chat rooms. And that's not even necessarily trolling, but just people not bringing forth their noble selves,
right.
I would say. And I think we should strive to obviously make a better network. And that requires acknowledging these things. And hopefully you will be part of the network in the future after a needed hiatus because this takes so much out of you. It
yes.
really does. People don't understand that. It's not just the researching for the shows or listening to the material of your guest
right.
Or writing out the notes. This requires your attention, your thinking. It hijacks your entire worldview, and this is not necessarily a bad thing, but it takes – precedence in your life over many other things and eats up a lot of thought processes.
Right, indeed. And let me just say, too, whether or not, especially the creators, the one group that probably I piss off more, I feel, are the creators. Because let me just tell you something right now. I couldn't manage being a creator on Long Island. It's impossible, okay? You want to avoid speaking to all non-whites, it's not going to happen. You're not going to have a job for long, okay? You're just going to, It's impossible.
You'd always go to the Northwest Front.
There you go. Yeah, it's white people everywhere there, supposedly. I don't know. But I'm not going to comment on that. But now, it does require your entire being. It really does. And I underestimated that. I really did. But at the same time, I feel this spiritual sort of weight upon me, and it just gets heavier and heavier every day. It really does, and I don't expect anyone besides fellow broadcasters or writers or anybody who's been extremely active, more so than not myself, of course, in this fight, to understand. It's a spiritual weight upon you, and it's just I feel the weight of the gods. I feel the weight of all of the men and women before me, looking at me, watching me in a way, and seeing if I prevail and help the race in any way, shape, form. I feel this sort of responsibility. I really do.
Like Atlas.
Yes. Quite so.
I understand. Now, in your last broadcast, I believe you said that you don't think that the Jewish power structure will last the year.
Yes.
Now, there's a heavy weight that is upon us, and a lot of people have a hard time being optimistic. But I'll tell you what, my optimism in this regard is what keeps me going through all of this mess, all of the different fights and all the different trash and the shit that gets thrown in various venues at us.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard to deal with, but I feel this sense of victory being so imminent, and it's something that I think a lot of people are starting to feel as well. They were pretty pessimistic in the years past, but right now in the poll over at Renegade Broadcasting, the victory in 2014 poll, is it possible for us to achieve real success in this new year if we work tirelessly? And 82% of the people said yes. That's out of 71 votes. 82% of the people said yes.
Great. Great. I honestly did not expect that. I read the poll and I said, oh, we got these naysayers coming in. We're going to have a lot of no's. But no, completely wrong. That's very good to see. Very raises my spirits that were raised already by the genuine beauty of our listenership. Now, me, Kyle, Mike, and I experienced the beauty and glory of our listenership firsthand, and it was one of the greatest greatest weeks of my life. It really was. And to meet these people, and it really the one thing that does pain me, not having a slot, say, is being detached from those genuine great people that I know were listening or are to listen yet to what I've broadcast thus far. And that's the one thing that does pain me, because I know they're out there and it's just, and they think like me and they agree with me. And it's saddening in a way, but at the same time, I would like to invite people. Don't worry. Don't get sad at all. I just need, to hibernate a little and study a lot and practice my violin, and I have all these projects, and I can get into some of the projects I have in mind, Kyle, if you'd like, but, you know.
Please, yeah. Well, the hibernation is very important to Germanic people in particular, people in the cold climates. This is something where you kind of need to conserve your energies a bit. And the bear is incredibly sacred to our people.
Absolutely.
And that's why all of these different memes, which we'll get into later, like the pedo bear.
Yes.
It takes our sacred animal, the animal of the berserkers, the bear skin wearers, and it desecrates it. But
here's the thing. This is why I've had a problem with some of the internet people thus far, because they do just that. They put out these memes that are, you know, laced with Japanese animation, and it just makes a mockery of our people in a way. And it's just like, it's debilitating, and it's pretty pathetic at the same time. But and at the very same time, I recognize that there are plenty of racially minded people who have no idea what the hell a pedo bear even is, and don't care, and won't ever care, and just want victory, want to defend their families. And those are the people I'm speaking to. Those are the people I want to be a part of. And these chicken necked losers, these trolls. Yeah, they put out these memes all day, and I'm not just including the keyboard warriors. I'm including the little Jews in the media who put this stuff out there. Like, I think you brilliantly brought this up. I didn't even realize it with the big to do with what's her name, Miley Cyrus.
Yeah,
that's key. That's absolutely key. Now, ladies and gentlemen, Kyle brought that up when he was speaking. It was on a roundtable or his own program, I forget. I'm sorry, but it was he was speaking about the Miley Cyrus concert where, you know, she was twerking, and more about twerking later. my political plan for twerking. That's a serious affront to us culturally. That's a serious affront to us spiritually. Broadcasting this live, millions of people watching live, and then it's recorded, and then it's commented upon over and over and over again on all the news stations. So it's just all the footage from it, all the energy from it is reverberated and replicated and multiplied millions of times over. And this is, so this is why it's so serious, and this is why the Jews at the top see this media as a tool of their magic, if you will, a tool of their to get their rituals out there into the minds and penetrate the minds of all peoples, all nations, especially the white peoples of the white countries still.
Right. They don't want the real knowledge, the ancestral knowledge.
Yes.
And Marie Cachet, I believe
yes.
his name is said, the wife of Varg Verkanes, she did some writing about the ancestral bear cult.
Mm-hmm.
And when you see it presented, the way that she laid it all out with the pictures and the reasoning behind why the Germanic people saw the bear and others saw the bear as so sacred to them,
mm-hmm.
it really just makes sense. And it's been so perverted over the years, especially these right. past few decades. And now we see the fruits of that, of those labors.
Now, here's a connection I'm just sort of making in my head right at this moment. Now, you see, the what's being done through the Jews, especially in the West, in Hollywood, in America, they're creating this sort of hyper-liberal, hyper-cultural Marxist floodgates open hellhole here in the Netherlands, in France, in the UK, in Germany, in Italy, in the United States, and Canada, and a large swath of the other Western European countries. Meanwhile, there is the what can be perceived as this Western cultural bulwark in the form of Russia. Now, they've had this symbol as the bear.
Right.
Represented by Russia. Now, what is being and who's the people with the pedo hunters? Where does pedo hunting happen in Russia?
In Russia, there you go.
Yeah, by Tayzak. And so you see, they know what they're doing. There's a degree of intelligence and craftiness, but you know, our traditions prevail and are I would say more powerful than theirs. It's just the fact that they've hijacked our systems, and it's each and every one, each and every of the systems. It's not just one or the other. It's all of them. And these Jews, that is, began as mere court Jews or merely these traders, these merchants in our towns back in the Renaissance and medieval era. And after that time period, they, like I said, became court Jews and began swaying directly the actions of monarchs. And once you do that, once you get into the state power and really start wielding it, right there in the prime node of power, that is the palaces of Europe, which are no doubt also the economic homes of those people's empires, that is Paris and Amsterdam and London, then you can do whatever you want, but have it be put upon the host nation. That is now in the form of white guilt, having the British and the French and the Dutch and the Belgian and the Americans cry boo-hoo about slavery all day and colonialism. Meanwhile, slavery and colonialism was benefiting the Jews the most, I would say, and not the poor working white man who was dying in the field of battle, who was toiling in the fields for hundreds of years. And just now, this glorious moment, ladies and gentlemen, this glorious moment right now in history where we're ready to transcend both cultural and national orders, and really as well as economic ones, and really see this as a racial awakening, only a racial awakening, where we, and if it's simply a racial awakening, we will transcend and see past our petty class differences.
Mm-hmm.
And this is something that Kai Murrus was just talking about, speaking directly to the Americans. And I think it was absolutely brilliant. Bill Rise had that on his show exclusively. It was people must check that out.
It's featured on the right sidebar in the featured video. If anybody's listening live,
yes,
they can find it there, or just search for Bill Rise on YouTube, and they'll be able to pull it up there. Now, I think you're making some great points there, and I think that this racial awakening, well, it seems to have begun earlier in the 20th century, particularly in Germany. Let's bring it back there, where the Bear Line is, Berlin. At the beginning part of the century, of course, you had the Weimar Republic after Germany was destroyed the first time, and all sorts of degeneracy and filth. And then the racial awakening took place. First, it was a national awakening, but it did start to become racial as well. That was ended, of course, and they couldn't let that spread any further, and it almost did. They almost won, and just imagine what it would have been like then. Nice. But afterwards, in Berlin and elsewhere in Germany, all sorts of filth and degeneracy came back. Mm-hmm. And you look at the state of the world, well, the state of the situation in America and around the world, it's pretty bad in terms of this pedo bear culture, this sick Jewish desire to deflower the budding stock of Aryan youth and others. They want to defile the innocence of all of our children.
Yes.
Even if they don't do it physically, they do it mentally. But in Germany in particular, it's very bad. They have government issued. This is after the Jews took complete control. The Jews won World War II. Everybody else lost it, okay?
Indeed.
The Jews won World War II. Everybody else lost. Just look at what has happened to our lands on both sides, the Axis powers and the Allies. But in Germany, they have magazines these days with young, pretty much pubescent teenagers stripped naked talking about their sexuality in the magazines.
Wow.
They have guidebooks issued from the government encouraging fathers to sexually stimulate their young girls. They have all sorts of really messed up things going on over there. Job placement programs turning women into whores.
Yep.
This is disgusting. This is so depraved.
And yes, as far as resistance goes, it would be a lot more widespread have it had it not been for the aforementioned conclusion to the World War II. Every single German my age, that is a young German male or female, from Germany, okay, you bring up, or anybody else brings up the Holocaust or anything, they just start cowering and shivering, and it is so sad. And this is the people that really expressed, may have not just, I mean, created National Socialism as a concept, but were the ethnicity, the nation, to express it in the realest way. And compounded by the rest of their history, their glorious, amazing, mighty history, the German nation, one of my favorite of the German European nations, to be honest with you, my most favorite country, nation to study, and all my favorite writers and artists are from there, and just so happens that most of my blood is from that nation as well. But to see that so mighty of a nation have its youngest so weak and so docile and sad and apologetic is it comes to be expected, to be honest with you, because Germanic people, let me tell you about Germanic people. They exemplify in their history, have exemplified both extremes of brutality and this loving benevolence that cannot be matched by really anybody else on the planet. I mean, besides other Aryan peoples. Go ahead.
That's part of the reason it's just so sad to see them being portrayed as the most evil, vile people in the entire world.
Yes.
And then when you realize the facts about how many of them died in that war, fighting in the war, all of the millions lost. And then when you learn about the civilian bombings, not just Dresden, but Hamburg, Berlin, and elsewhere, a policy of bombing civilians, which is a war crime, and yet it's the Germans who were treated as war criminals and their soldiers, the prisoners of war, were let to starve in large fields without any kind of shelter. These were the real extermination camps. And when you know about this, the German women and girls and old grandmas raped and tortured at the hands of the communists, and some of it from the Allies as well. Then when you see how much things have been turned on its head, and you see all of the filth that is being pushed forth as virtuous now, it makes you so damn angry.
Yes, and I can't imagine what the still the Germans with the still beating heart, with the memory, the blood memory of the Suebians and the Karuskers and all the tribes that make up the German nation, what their ancestors would be thinking of them, what they themselves, the still living Germans, think about their own home country. It's an experience I cannot imagine. I really can't, because Germany today is very much like the Weimar Republic, where you have a Berlin that's very liberal and filled to the brim with other races. But even still, back in the Weimar days, it was mostly Germans. It was mostly Europeans. Now it's just Turks everywhere, and that's just one group that's just filling up the demographics at an untold rate. At the beginning of the year, I remember on my broadcast, I think I at least brought up the demographic of the census of the country of Germany, and it's just changed so much, and it's just so obvious. But again, these Germans who are my age, and I know there's plenty of them, they don't see this as very serious, because, I mean, legally, the Federal Republic of Germany is nothing more than just some Jewish dream, if a pipe dream. And basically, the rest of the Germans who are not awakened are simply going along with it and allowing it to be done because of the results of World War II by the barrel of a gun. National Socialism was dismantled. Denazification, Kyle, and audience, is is literally the death of Aryandom. It's what's made our people so docile in the first place, because, I mean, without a system that transcends religion and politics and simple and mere society, qualms of society, national socialism, without that system within at least one country, the collection of Aryan nations throughout the world, we have nothing. We have nothing, especially the fact that liberal democracy never was changed into some sort of cultural Marxist nightmare by way of Jewish academia. And it's an affront to us as a whole. And the sooner white people in general realize that, I mean, the better. But I, in all honesty, I don't think it takes the entirety of the white race to realize what we did in World War II is wrong.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think enough people really realize at this point, and enough people are soon to realize it.
Go ahead. Now we're experiencing the results of the Frankfurt School, for example, which was forced out of Germany by those evil Nazis. And then, you know, you start to understand, well, this Frankfurt School, they were up to some real disgusting things and trying to engineer our minds in some terrible ways.
Yeah.
And they've been very effective. And, well, maybe those Germans, maybe those National Socialists, well, maybe they had the right idea. And I just wanted to bring up the show I did in the past that went into the different kinds of depraved things that are going on in Germany. This is actually one of my last shows on Star Theory Radio on Oracle Broadcasting. If people go over to startheoryradio.com, it's still up there, and it's called Punishing the Peddlers of Perversion. That was the show title, and I gave the real examples because some people in the chat were thinking it was just kind of too ridiculous to be true, the kinds of things that are happening in Germany right now. Well, folks, I've got to tell you, it is true. It's Kinsey's wet dream going on right now in the entire civilized world, if you could call it that. It is a very, very bad situation that we're facing, and they've gone after our children because these are our future generations. These are the people who are going to shape society moving forward. And if all they're focused on is butt sex and poop humor and groid sports games,
yeah,
and other sorts of just depraved and mindless behavior, then they're never going to be connected to their ancestors. They're not going to think twice about miscegenating and destroying their lines forever. And they're going to be incapable of putting up any kind of serious resistance whatsoever.
Right. they'll be apt to cheer it on. I mean, we've talked about ad nauseum, as well as the rest of us here, the real white patriots, talking about ad nauseum Jamie Foxx, I mean, on the SNL monologue. Now that's a pivotal moment culturally, because he's literally lauding simulating killing white people in a movie, in a Jewish movie, and he has the whole audience cheering.
Incredible synchronicity, Siegfried. I uploaded 1 minute of that audio. So if you'd like, let's go to that right
Do
here.
It.
Yeah.
And I got a movie coming out, Django. Check it out. Leonardo DiCaprio, Samuel Jackson. Django Unchained, I play a slave. How black is that? And in the movie, I have to wear chains. How whack is that? But don't be worried about it, because I get out the chains, I get free, I save my wife, and I kill all the white people in the movie. How great is that? And how black is that? But I'm going to tell you right now, speaking of blackness, my president, President Obama's back up in the White House 4 more years. Black is that. And not only that, he's so black, he was playing basketball during the election day. How black is that? But yeah. He's also late for his acceptance speech. Okay, all the white people, this is your turn. How black is that?
Yeah. So,
yeah.
I didn't know you were going to bring it up. I was going to bring it up.
It's amazing.
It's just such an amazing example for us to use of how white genocide is applauded in our society.
Yes, indeed. And and this is something that I realized many, 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 many years ago, and that is this. And I partook in it to a degree, not contributing to any Trotskyite parties or anything ridiculous like that, just simply in a cultural sense in my own little world. That is that young white people, it's been made fashionable to hate things that are white, to go out of your way and say, you know, oh, that's too white, so I can't like it. Or you know, no one's going to have a thought process like that. I'm just trying to put this in a way you can understand, I guess. To phrase it like this again, it's unfashionable to be white, okay? And what? Who are the hosts of all the TV shows, and who's the hero in all these movies now? Like we just brought up Django Unchained, and even when it's a white skinned character, it's supposed to be a white character. It's always played by a Jew, okay? And white people have been denigrated over and over again in the media for 15 plus years in my own experience, that is. So this is how I know this is true, because I've noticed this stuff since I can remember, starting, I can't tell you how many years ago, that I've noticed this, that, again, white people are unfashionable, they're uncool, they can't dance, they can't do anything, they're always so lame and boring and blah, 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 all this. And this is just the cultural spiritual partnership with the Negroid and the Jew, and the Jew revels in this, and all the while, Kyle and audience, the ultra religious Orthodox super Zionist Jews hate this, and it pisses them off, and that's the essence of this creepy, weird Jewish civil war that's occurring at the same time, but at the very same time, they're all Jews, and they'll always see themselves as Jews, and their actions must benefit Jews in general before anything else. Well, so if it means ganging up with Negroids, so be it. If it means the destruction of Aryandom, so be it. We gotta gang up with the Groids, I guess. So that's how they figure it.
It's white genocide what they're doing by promoting the Negroids, who they don't actually respect. They like use them. But they have elevated them to this high status in society, just like that quote that Mike read in that Exposing the Race Mixing Agenda video I put together. Elevating the Negro to different celebrity statuses in sports and entertainment, and then pairing them off with the white women. And all of these movies that have come out where they have, either explicit race mixing going on or as you mentioned, just the white characters looking like bumbling idiots while the blacks are shown to be heroic and noble and smart and witty and funny and they can dance well. This all in essence amounts to white genocide, and it does increase the amount of white women going out there and forever ruining their inheritance, their genetic inheritance, by throwing it away to miscegenation.
Well, Kyle, they think part of the programming too is they think it's funny and they think it's great to usher in the end of white people. They think white genocide is a great thing. They literally do. And let me tell you, I don't think I was this extreme in my thinking. I think it was more of a, if there is such a thing, a conservative type of Trotskyite. So if I can describe my early political inclinations, if I can just as deranged as they were. That's the best way I can describe it. sort of not so much agreeing with the greasy haired creeps, groids or what have you, running around yelling off Rage Against the Machine quotes all day, like it's going to do something. And Tom Morello saying, this is one quote by Tom Morello, the guitarist in that band. He said, good music makes you want to get with your girl and dance. Great music makes you want to go torch a police car, whatever, and be a, be a anarchist and destroy infrastructure. You know, this is what they love, destruction. They're groid minder. They're groid thinkers. They are.
I'll destroy it.
Yeah, that's a coarse way of putting it. It's more of just being a degenerate. Because if you were an Aryan, you'd be all for building things and building true relations with your neighbors, and trying to help out with people who deserve it. But being someone who just simply wants to disrupt order and genocide a whole people that made your thinking in the first place possible is degenerate. Is how an enemy behaves, and you deserve no mercy whatsoever. And here's by the way, I brought up twerking politically. This is my great idea. I think this is a great idea. The Obama administration, or whatever presidential administration it is, or at least get a petition out there. Let's arrest anyone caught twerking. And it'll be a cash reward, and we'll balance out not only the economy, but the clean up the streets and all these bars. Think about all the money could be made. All these bars and dance clubs throughout the country. We can just get some roving band of white people, men and women, going in and arresting several people. And wow, can you think of the cultural cleanup we'll be doing in that? But Obama, he himself twerks. So it's like we could arrest him. So not like Obama will endorse this idea at all. I don't think they'll ever get behind it. But
it's working all over Larry Sinclair, right? I actually commented on a cultural Marxist video, actually put out by Russia Today, about the African history of twerking and how it's basically cultural appropriation by people like Miley Cyrus. Wow. This goes back years and years, okay? It's a very ancient tribal thing with a lot of meaning that we're just not seeing. It's not just sexual. This is an expression of the African woman's beauty, okay? So I commented on that if I were in charge of this society, twerking would be punishable by death. So it's funny you brought that up.
Oh yeah, and some of them may see it like this, like some of these magic Negroes in the academies. They probably see it although they may be a little more conservative and think it's a little too risque for their own taste. They'll probably be fine with the fact that many of their own racial kinsmen and women go into make music videos. I mean, if you want to call it music, so-called dancing, twerking in graveyards on top of graves of dead white people. And they think that's funny. They think that's not just funny, but part of a culture war that they are very indeed entranced in and they're aware of. And the Jew has gotten them aware of it in the form of this reveling in white genocide, thinking white genocide is just the coolest thing ever, man.
I wouldn't be surprised if within the decade there is a course, or at least courses at many colleges, about it might be under some other banner, African studies or Afro-American, this or that, but there will be a course studying the history of twerking and how it was used as a means of liberation for the African-American people, and how twerking on the graves of dead white men is just their way of, letting off their steam about the history of oppression that they faced under white rule.
Right. And if we say anything about it, it's protected. It's a protected speech, but whatever we say, it's just the worst thing in the world. And it's just so, it's against everything good and wholesome. Meanwhile, we're the people trying to protect wholesomeness and innocence. It's totally backwards. It's totally We are totally behind enemy lines. Everyone's correct when they say that. We are culturally and legally enemies of the state and the whole Jewish structure. And they know it. And they're frightened of us. They're shivering at the fact that there are millions and millions of people not yet categorized politically, which I think they are politically soon going to be in this country at least. I mean, in Greece, it's exploding. That's part of the reason why Jews are just are scared. They're simply scared right now because Greece is just a perfect place for it. And people begin to say that, oh, it's because the economy, and that's why all this racial hatred's occurring. Well, no, it has to do with very old historical events in Greek history. I mean, Greek people were basically the head of Western civilization with the huge swath of Alexandrian imperial power. And then after that, even, they were might, and their glory was unmatched, and they were colonizing all of the Mediterranean and all this. And then they get to this point where they had this, they were Christianized, yes, but they had this mighty Byzantine Empire, which ended up being destroyed by Turks, and as well as the rest of white people backstabbing them. Now they have this chance to get it all back, and it's glorious. I think it's amazing.
Oh, yeah.
The Golden Dawn is a very amazing thing to not just me personally, and not just Americans in general, and not just Greeks, the Greek diaspora in general, but all of white people throughout the world, and it's just such an amazing thing. And I want to have solidarity with them and have them know that I want them to succeed and be safe in
Certainly.
These dark times. We know how much the state loathes them over there, how much Samaras has contempt for his own people, how much of a traitor Samaras is, the current prime minister there, or president, I forget what the title is officially there. I'm sorry, I'm going on a tangent here, Tom.
We know here in America that our media, the Jewish media, loathes them as well, that either they won't report on them or they'll report on them by calling them the neo-Nazis in Greece have done this atrocity or that as the headline. So it's definitely interesting to see what's going on in Europe at large, and we'll get back to this a bit in the broadcast. But Siegfried, you want to maybe go to a little bit of a music break here?
Oh yeah, that'd be perfect.
And then we'll come back. We'll talk about nationalism rising in Europe, the possibility of it here. We'll get into some of the memes that I just hate. That have been perpetrated mainly by the Jews and Jewish groids and the rest over the past few years. See what you have to say about that, and also perhaps some of our own memes that we can be using. I'll get your take on the canal, the French anti-Semitic hand gesture as well, which is all the rave these days. So we have a lot to talk about, we'll be back in just a few minutes here, and we could take callers, too, if you have the time for it.
Sure, yeah, I'll do that.
All right, great. So I know a lot of people out there have some questions, some comments. You have to call before 10 p.m. Be back in just a few minutes here. This is the Blitzkrieg Broadcast, and my guest is Siegfried here at RenegadeBroadcasting.com.
Again, the rain will come, the lines are young.
Welcome back. That was Fulcodia, Into Battle. Siegfried, you there?
Yes, sir. That was a good music choice.
Thank you. So, Siegfried, we could start off actually anywhere you want to. I mentioned a bunch of topics that we can bring up in this second section here.
Sure.
What are your ideas?
The memes thing sounded pretty good, so why don't we go through that?
All right, sounds good. I'll start off. I put some images in the slider for Blog Talk Radio, and one of them was referencing YOLO, which I see everywhere.
Yeah.
I actually saw I think it was a some kind of business, maybe a beauty business or some other shop that was named YOLO. And this was a big phrase by the rapper Drake.
Yes.
The Jewish, groidish rapper Drake. YOLO, you only live once. Now, I actually think that YOLO, you only live once, is this Jewish idea that has infected the minds of every single person who believes in an Abrahamic religion.
Yes.
That you only live once, and that's how I think they actually get a great deal of control upon us.
I totally agree with that. And this is merely a modern update for the plastic culture we have.
Mm-hmm.
And let me say this at least, Kyle, I'll let you continue. I'm sorry. my third and final Marxist indoctrination center that I had to brace through, I saw the dormitories, the residence halls, adorned with this YOLO thing. You know, the popular thing to do, I guess, throughout the country's universities was to take these little sticky notes, right? And create a picture out of it on your window so as to advertise what's your suite's all about or what would express yourself through sticky notes, right?
Mm-hmm.
And many of them, not just a few, but many of them put this YOLO acronym on their windows. And I just stood there and I just at first I had no idea. I'm a cantankerous old man, really. even though I'm 23, I really am out of touch with a lot of things. And at the time I had no idea what that meant. So I really had to, and this, at that time, it was already like, two, three years old of a adage, a cultural adage. And I had no idea about the influence in it. It just astounded me.
Mm-hmm.
It really did. And to see, the strength, the still the very real, very ever-present race of the Abrahamic mindset and belief system is the BS of the Abrahamic faiths, right? Is very powerful even still, and the Jews are so crafty that they're so crafty that they can update this spiritual sort of worldview machination to the new plastic, electric, digital information age generation, i.e. the millennials, i.e. Generation Y, my generation, that
mm-hmm.
is so toyed with by these filthy, filthy Jews.
Yeah, it's being used a little bit differently, though. The whole YOLO idea in days of yore would get people to be a bit passive or meek or
yes.
fearful of the afterlife where they'd spend eternity. So instead of focusing on the world around them, they were really worried about sinning and pissing off Jehovah or the priest or whoever, being seen as a witch, whatever it was. This
yes.
this whole YOLO thing was a little bit different, and now they've updated today's culture. And what it's all about these days is you only live once, so you got to act a fool. You
yes.
got to do really stupid stuff, get really wasted on our Jewish liquor, spend $13 a drink in one of these clubs, throw up, go home with the most random slut in the bar. Don't live your life intelligently because you only live once. You got to enjoy it, right?
Right. Right. And I actually brought this up in a class I had right after bracing through this ridiculous campus, and I get to this sociology class and we're discussing consumerism or what have you, something along those lines, something to do with our generation to a degree where I can comment on it. And I said, well, today's so-called culture, it worships mediocrity, it worships stupidity. So being smart and articulate and well-dressed and well-spoken was the apex of manhood. Nowadays, it's just you, being stupid and for the sake of being stupid and speaking like an African, that just speaks a pidgin English and has all this knowledge about useless, pointless, degenerate, perverted Jewish TV shows, that's now the apex of manhood and masculinity, and that doesn't make a healthy society at all. Mm-hmm. It makes a very sick one that needs to be cured, and whatever means of curing that calls for, I am all for.
Here's the thing about the afterlife and their control over the ideas of the afterlife, which this whole YOLO idea fits into, that I think really enable them to keep people from revolting, because they're so attached to this life they have here. They're not considering Valhalla or
right.
What other kind of future might await them. They're not thinking that reincarnation might not necessarily be as the Hindus say, but that we don't go off to some kind of heaven, at least not permanently. We keep coming back here to Earth in our descendants. And if there are no descendants left, if white genocide is complete, how could we come back? Or if we just are unable to thwart the cultural Marxists, thwart the degradation of everything, the destruction of Western civilization, then we would be coming back into a place that is even more of a hellhole than it is now.
Yeah.
So it is up to us in our time here to do everything that we can and not necessarily be so worried about what they could do to this physical body that's here on the earth. Be
right.
be careful with yourself so as to be as effective as you can for as long as possible. But don't buy into their ideas about what happens to you once you are gone, because none of them know. And the ones who are preaching the loudest are probably feeding you a whole bunch of lies.
Yes, and the Jews, they thrive on lies. Their very power structure thrives on lies. And in terms of Renegade the Network, we've been talking about the Holocaust. And I think that's an all-important discussion to have, fake event, in my opinion, world event that is holding up so much what is going on in this world. It is really ridiculous when you think about it. I mean, think about now think about the millions and millions of dollars made in the box office, and then all the millions of dollars used to create all these ridiculous Holocaust-themed movies, which in terms of effect, do nothing more than really create the innocent role, the hero role for the Jew, where the Jew is the hero, the Jew can do no wrong, the Jew has only been persecuted and made a mockery of and abused by the evil Germans, which more evil German programming. I mean, this is the prime node of evil German programming, which is one of the most ridiculous pieces of programming the Jews have ever even embarked upon in world history, because they have to get the entirety of the white world to think that the Germans, one of the most nice and kind and benevolent and creative and efficient peoples on the planet, are somehow the worst of the worst and hate everybody and think they're the best, even though they're so humble and they're so modest, these German people that I've met in my life personally, that it just knowing them on a personal level shatters everything, every conception that the Jews have wanted to instill in the white world. So their lies are so ridiculous that it really, and I've been saying this for a while, has been them digging their own graves, trying to make these things true by spending millions and millions of dollars, again, millions and millions of dollars spent on these movies alone. And then think about all the professors and the speeches and the whatnot and the TV specials and on and on and on it goes with these Jewish programming scams that they depend upon. Their whole power structure, again, depends upon lies, depends upon degeneracy and the limp-wristedness of white men worldwide.
And it does depend upon the devaluation of life. Now, before I was mentioning how we can't be always afraid of shedding our mortal coil, especially for noble causes. But the way that life is devalued now, I think that being willing to lose your life for something you believe in so much, that is actually valuing life greatly.
Yes.
Whereas the way it is today, life is so devalued. I saw a recent story about a store in Detroit where some Negro was shot by another Negro, and he lay in the doorway of a convenience store. And for 5 minutes, people just walked over him before anybody even called the police.
Oh, right, yeah.
So they don't have any value for life, and they're trying to the Jews are trying to get us to see life as just something that can be taken recklessly whenever, and there's nothing really too abnormal about that. Whereas just a few decades ago, people used to have to order, you know, these tapes like Faces of Death. Yeah. You know, sure, there was a whole subculture with snuff films and all that other degenerate, disgusting, depraved, awful material. Mm-hmm. But there was something, Faces of Death, where it was, you know, a surveillance video of people dying, getting hit by trains or whatever. Now that's called YouTube.
Right.
Now that's called looking at any a TV station during any time when children are going to be watching, and it's just
yes.
people being slaughtered in the most absurd of ways. And it's like The Walking Dead, like you've brought up on your
yes.
own show. Just death, death, and more death. Never real celebrations of life and loving and joy. Because that is actually, in essence, white culture. That
yes.
is what the Germanics in particular also were producing with all of their great classical music. Think of how that makes you feel,
mm-hmm.
how it uplifts the spirit. There is none of that today in the popular streams.
Oh, and absolutely. And back to the what you were saying as to the it's just this, the sensification, really. Throughout the media with the TV. Now, the TV was pretty bad. I mean, it was pretty gory, and there was a lot of this garbage, and politically correct garbage, it's like multicultural garbage, throughout the 90s when I was growing up on the TV, so which is really easily accessible. But, the worst of the worst was on late at night, but, you know, they didn't, you know, that's the only real protective force there is besides a parental guide keeping their kids away from this. But at the same time, you know, so you hang out with your friends, you're going to see it. Okay, it's there. It's the Jews want the kids to see it. I mean, that's what they want the most. They want those kids' minds taken. And again, that's why they hate me, and that's why they hate anybody else my age, male or female, that is not going along with their garbage. Anyway, but you were saying, again, the degenerate content found on the internet and the TV, it's been multiplied by an untold amount by not just the digitalization of all these little devices that every child has almost. I mean, at least in this upper middle class area I'm in, they all have these little iPhones and what have you, and they're able to browse the internet at their leisure and see literally anything they want, anything they want. And back in my day, I can't believe I'm using that phrase now, but back in my day, it wasn't exactly possible. I mean, we didn't have super fast internet connections. Now these children have Wi-Fi connections. They can literally see anything they want, any degenerate piece of Jewish filth, Jewish kike filth. They can watch it all on these little toys, these little Chinese-made toys, and yeah, be programmed without a Jew even being anywhere near them. And they don't even have to go to school anymore. They don't have to go to these universities anymore because they could just...
They'll be in Pink University.
Yes, they could just destroy their own minds via YouTube, you know, because like I said, YouTube, you know, back in, what was it, 2007, 08, you are the person of the year, and just everybody is worth your time, and, you know, everybody should have the chance to broadcast themselves on YouTube and all this, and it's just all this energy and money by the corporate Jewish structure has been put into this internet arena. So the thing is, it's like, we're out here with the truth, and the truth has been on the internet for the whole time, basically. And there's this sort of war where we're on one side and the other side is a Jew. But they supply the people in who are neutral, so to say, with all this with bread and circuses, so to say, with this sort of mind candy, where it's just you're gaining nothing from watching or viewing it, besides perhaps just making yourself more into a degenerate, which is what the Jews love really more than anything. They want you to be degenerate and ruin your own relationships and ruin with your family and your friends and just become this sort of a drug-addled fool. And at the same time, that's made fashionable, like we were discussing before.
One of the big ways that they're able to program us is through the memes that they generate. We generate our own, but they have theirs, and they keep it really simple. Like we said, YOLO. Another one that they use oftentimes, sometimes in conjunction with YOLO, is keep calm and do such and such.
Yes.
And they put the crown above it. Oftentimes it's in front of the British flag there. And it's one of these things. I think it started out of New York City. They'd see it in, you know, people would see it in a storefront windows on, you know, fashionable art, right? Just it's edgy or something.
Right.
It's kind of like the whole Shepherd Fairey line of clothing, Obey. It's almost like the They Live sayings that you'd see when you put on the glasses, you know, the John Carpenter movie. It's almost like it's gotten to the point right now where they're not even hiding the subliminal messages. They're just telling you, keep calm. Do not rebel against anything. Be content with what is going on. Obey us.
Indeed. And it's such a cold outwardly, overtly Orwellian sort of mantra that they put out there, and it's also harkens back to this YouTube nonsense where it's just like you can customize a message, but it's always just like it's always mired in this corporate garbage. Where it's like a TV show quote, and they'll put their favorite little TV show character there, and it's like they'll tie it in with some. Something that the character said or something from a show like the aforementioned Walking Dead or something like that, or Big Lebowski or some sort of other cult Jewish piece of garbage that they just distract people on and on every day with. And this keep calm thing is a prime example of just that, where it's this vague message. But at the same time, it's united in its insipidness, its inane nature, where there's nothing really said there that's revolutionary, which is clearly what we need in this world, because there's cities that used to be completely white and where white women could walk around with it without any fear at all. But nowadays, somehow that we don't have that anymore, even though we're supposedly very progressive nowadays, and we've moved away from the horrible worlds of the 18th and 19th centuries. My God, it was such a terrible time where in Philadelphia, Washington, D.C., Detroit, New York, Boston, white women can walk around with almost no fear at all from being attacked, but nowadays it's over, and I wonder why, and I wonder who causes it all. And it's just so, you know, these things are so obvious to us. This is something I wanted to bring up today's show, if I may. All these memes, they serve to further distract people and further get them divided, you know, with the keep calm thing again. They could use that with their sports teams and just get mired into that fake tribalism even more. It's all about getting these people who are incapable of processing these epic, epic things, like racial survival. That is a huge, epic undertaking, a phenomena within the world. I mean, just a race, when you talk about a race, that is a huge, massive, convoluted thing to discuss and break down. And it's just these many people, I mean, I don't want to say many, actually most people are incapable of even realizing and interpreting and pondering the fate of a whole race. They're just not it's just not possible for them.
Siegfried, what do you think about the positive memes we're pushing right now?
Okay.
Because we can get back to some of the negative ones you might want to talk about, the ones that really irk you, but we're trying to distill the plight of an entire race into a very short, easily read series of words. And I really like the one that is being presented on these banners, the ones
yes.
we're doing the fundraising for. Diversity, in quotations, equals white genocide. I think that would really get people thinking yes. about what's going on. I really do, and that's what we need. We need a short little seed that will sprout in a person's mind
yes.
and take over from there.
I completely agree, Kyle, and the way it's written is perfect because, again, growing up in the 90s, I was handed nothing but I remember in the elementary schools and the middle school the posters and the TV shows and everything was about diversity, everything, okay? And they use that word over and over, that one word over and over and over and over again. And and to put into quotation marks and just slap it right back in their faces, but really, and then use a word that's so strong too that they've also used, like genocide.
Yep.
And it works on so many levels. I totally endorse this this new drive we got. This is great. And we I want to applaud and thank all the people so far who've done such things and put them over overpasses. Those men and women are patriots, okay? Those are patriots. Those are my comrades, and I applaud them once again. I mean, this spreading the message is a great thing, and I'm not against street activism in that sense. When it gets to a point where, like, you're working to get a reaction out of these non-whites, these non-Aryanlings, just to get them to do something to attack you, and it's not good. And when we have a message that's united like that, I think it's very positive. It's not inflammatory in any sense. I mean, maybe, but just using just the series of words, how it's composed and everything, I think it's brilliant. It's powerful.
Great. Well, I'm glad to get you on board with that, and I think a lot of people could get on board with this, just like the 14 words, how that's able to be something where a lot of people can rally behind it.
Yes, indeed, and this is not just an American. The beauty of it, just with my own nation in mind, I'm I don't know, I can't really say I'm proud because I had nothing to do with the Brotherhood. But I'm very elated that this happened in my own country, that I was born just 5 years after all that transpired. And it's shocked the it was a shockwave throughout the white world, throughout the whole Western world, where now I can go on the internet and find and look up any Western country and see people have websites or even have had demonstrations with a 14 words banner, and it is just nothing short of glorious and nothing short of incredible and invigorating to see white people across the world getting behind the 14 words, because this is what this is all about. If I can make any comments further about the 14 words, I don't think it means just one country, because that would never fly in Europe. There's
right.
multiple nations who are all hijacked by this very same Jewish power structure, okay? Although their circumstances may differ, although their demographics may differ. Yes, Poland is much more Polish than England is English. So there's all these separate different problems attacking and affecting different nations at the same time. But again, at the same time, it's a Jewish problem. It's a Jewish problem worldwide, so it's going to take a worldwide white effort. And I think the 14 words is the prime thing to get behind, because not everyone's going to be a creator. Not everyone's going to be a Voltanist. Not everyone's going to be an atheist or a cosmotheist or anything. I mean, it's I'd like to see the Global Imperium unfold the 14 words, demonstrating and proclaiming your worldview loudly and proudly is amazing. But at the same time, not every white person needs to do that. I mean, the talks we've had on this network and others about Lone Wolf, if you will, plans of action. I can't even really say what white people should do, because the thing is, Kyle, the white man's going to do what the white man wants to do.
Yep.
Okay, there's nothing I can say or do unless I had some sort of title that
can
sway
influence.
Their acts.
You can influence
okay.
a bit.
But the thing is, like, especially in this country, America, which was founded by frontiersmen
yeah.
who did what they wanted and founded the type of communities they wanted, they're going to do what they want. They're going to do what they want. And all I can really say is, if it achieves victory, then do it. Just make sure you don't hurt your own white people at the same time. If they're white people that deserve it, good. They deserve it. Make examples of them. They are tripe. They are garbage to our race. And you know, if we want eugenics, we want actual national eugenics, we're going to have to engage in some sort of eugenics that we can actually control. This is not a game, okay? This is not a little thing. This is a topic. This is the race. This is the most important thing in existence.
Yeah.
I mean, this is the most epic undertaking imaginable.
Now, on the topic of eugenics, I agree with you. But some women out there have expressed a frustration with how they've heard some white nationalists discuss eugenics,
okay.
which would basically be a forced breeding program. Whereas the way I see it is that if we had the best of our race studying together, exercising together, doing all sorts of activities together, mm-hmm. they were encouraged with different kinds of programs. Once they coupled up of their own free accord, and you are a romantic person yourself, Siegfried, and I think you have to respect the power of natural coupling, not enforced coupling, but encouraged coupling for the best people of our race, then I think this is what would produce the future brilliance.
Oh, yeah.
Not necessarily a scientific type of eugenics, where whoever. I don't really trust scientists often, let's just say that.
Yeah. Yeah, I wouldn't leave the realm of house building, family building to a man in a lab coat. That's spooky to me. That's something out of like a Huxley novel.
Right.
I mean, this what we're going to have is going to transcend, again, National Socialism, the type of worldview I have and many people listening really have or like to say they have, it's something that transcends science. It's something that transcends mere politics, mere religion. This is about our blood and our future. And if we can revisit these memes once again, you only live once, right? This is the sort of hippie-like thinking where it's just it's all live in the now, man. They had that one song by the Grassroots, "Live for Today." You know, it was a sort of like romantic hippie song where it's like, you know, they're all doing what they want and planning for the future, but you know, I got you. It's just demented thinking that, quite frankly, is hurting our race beyond.
Yeah.
Beyond any sort of beyond what we can even fathom. I mean, spiritually, culturally destroying the white race is what these Jews have been really working at for a long, 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 long time, longer than I think we can even conceive of. And it just goes to show you how powerful they can be if they are to at least simply control the culture, which is what they do right now. I mean, they have these. I wanted to bring this up with Mike the other night on the New Year's thing. If we had an Italian-owned section of Hollywood, say, I mean, even after in the post-war era, in the 40s, imagine what the headway, cultural headway, we would have had if it was one or a series, a collection of white Aryan movie studios, which only made positive white Aryan movies and only hired Aryan white actors and everything else, and think of all the history, Italian history and other portions of white history we can replicate through film, which is a very powerful medium, which I think is still a medium we can use. Maybe not at this point. I mean, it takes a lot of money to make a movie, perhaps, and a lot of manpower.
What about, the documentary? We were able to do that with a small budget, and Mike wants to put together a fiction film. Now, these don't have to be to start off with the same kind of production value that they're putting to these other ones, but I see what you're going with that, but all of these tools that the white person has invented, all of these incredible machines, incredible technologies, I think we really need to take these back. I don't want to be completely dependent upon them and enslaved to them, which is what the Jew desires. But these should be working for our betterment rather than our destruction. I think that is for sure. And the more and more we can make headway into these media realms, the better.
Yes, indeed. And what I was trying to say is not simply making movies, but making these epic sort of westerns and period films.
Yeah.
Because is the audience out there, the primarily white American audience, would they be more interested in Iron Age Africa? Or a gunpowder age Europe, or classical Greece, or medieval Russia, or Renaissance England, or World War I era France. I mean, all these time periods we could use, and we would be putting a positive light upon it and not using it to culturally destroy not just white people, but the audience viewing these movies in the first place, and to get them to hate their own people. And I mean, that's what's been done with these movies. I mean, and you could use some of these films, yes, for propaganda, and use clips of them to make a point and kind of display what things were like back in the day. But you know, these Jewish movies that use our time periods, it's just like so. It's really, they've used millions of dollars to really destroy our history and our race. I mean, wow. I mean, it's you got to really stand in awe of what these Jews have done with their Hollywood movies. But I don't think any of us are surprised by that one bit. It's just the fact that I think if we had our own studio, say, that I think and I know, which would be very possible, at least in this country alone, galvanized and created by one central party, the cultural wing of a party, say, then we would make a lot of cultural headway and really convince a lot more people than simply doing these broadcasts, in all honesty. As much as I enjoy it and as much as I value all the input and all the work of people everywhere on this network and elsewhere, there's a lot more we could be doing, but we're just not because, well, there's a lot of reasons why, but...
Right, and the White Rabbit Radio guys, they're working with animation because they're able to do that, you know, somewhat low budget, but even that costs quite a lot. So
yes,
we're doing what we can in the media realms, obviously, if we had more funding, had ceased operation tirelessly. In these propaganda endeavors, we could change people's minds so very quickly.
Oh, yeah.
But it's already happening with what we have, and it will only get bigger, and eventually that money will come, and these institutions will be formed, and things will be turned around. That's just the course of things. That's what's going to happen. Why? Because we say so. Now, let's get on to some other of the memes that have been getting around recently. I mentioned the canal or the quenelle. I don't know how you necessarily say that in France. It was started by, I believe he's black or some kind of mixture, a comedian. And it's this gesture, which is, they say, kind of like the opposite of the Nazi salute, because that is banned in France. And so this canal is a downward pointing salute with the other arm going across the chest, and apparently this is now huge in France, and they do it in association with a pineapple, apparently in some kind of jab towards the Holocaust because of some linguistic connection. It's also who is the black basketball player who had given the canal as well. So this is almost the Mark Glenn anti-Semitic multicultural coalition being formed here.
I didn't take that very seriously, but it looks like as though it's out there. It's a real thing. And
Tony Parker of the Spurs.
Ah,
that's who it was.
Yeah. I mean, these since the blacks, they have so much sway. They really do in this country alone. They could really put these things out there if they tried. If they really wanted Obama to do what they wanted to do him to do, stop being involved with these wars for one thing. They don't do that. They don't. But at the same time, you know, seeing something like this, it kind of elates me. Yet, I'm always very skeptical. I'm really not sure what to think about it, honestly, Kyle.
It is pretty cool to see lots and lots of young people, mainly French right now,
yes,
doing an anti-Semitic gesture, as it's called. That is apparently also somewhat pro-Nazi, and I think that's a good, healthy thing to see there. And the Jews are absolutely fuming about how these pictures are being posted everywhere. Because these young kids, they know what can happen if they do the Roman salute, as it's called. They found a this way to do it, which kind of subverts the Jewish hate crime laws. And hey, we're going into the archives here. You want to stick around for just a little bit? We'll wrap this up here tonight.
Okay, that sounds good.
All right, so people go over to renegadebroadcasting.com, and if you have the desire and you want to call in, do it in the next minute here, 347-633-9657. Yeah, so they have discovered this gesture, which they find amusing, which pisses off the Jews. And I think that if you are in some of these countries, well, what is it, 17 countries where you can't even cast doubt on the 6 million Jews who died in the Holocaust?
Right.
Well, you can find other ways to communicate your message. It's a damn shame that you don't have any real free speech, but in essence, we often don't overhear either in many regards. So let's be intelligent about this and also have some fun. What do you think about people taking pictures, doing this gesture to move this meme along? What do you think about that?
I think it's pretty good. I mean, it seems to be concentrated in the Francophone and not really transcending through, of course, not to the German speaking world. But if it really, we're doing it right now. We get it into the Anglophone and maybe even into the Russophone, or even the Hispanic world. That would be key, because then we'd really cover the entire planet at that point. The Anglophone is a prize. And if we get these sort of memes into the English-speaking world, I think more headway can be made. So until then, right now I'm kind of skeptical, but it does seem like it's a positive thing. And if it's ticking off the Jews that much, then yeah, I'm probably going to like it. But once again, just get it into the Anglophone, get it into the English-speaking world, and we should make some sort of cultural headway. Kyle, you there? Can you hear me?
I remember going to the last above-ground weather, it was the Weatherman or the Weather Underground, the last above-ground convention, and sitting in a room, and the question that was debated was it or was it not the duty of every good revolutionary to kill all newborn white babies? And at that point, it seemed like a relevant framing of an issue. The logic being, hey, look, through no fault of their own, these white kids are going to grow up to be part of an oppressive racial establishment internationally, and so really, your duty is to kill newborn white babies. And I remember one guy kind of tentatively and apologetically suggesting that seemed like it may be contradictory to the larger humanitarian aims of the movement, and being kind of booed down.
Okay, welcome back. I got cut Whoa. Off there. That was the audio there was somebody who was part of the Weather Underground, a communist terrorist organization.
Yeah.
Pretty much led by Bill Ayers, who was one of Barack Obama's good buddies, a professor at Columbia now. And they wanted to kill lots of white newborn babies because that would be the ethical thing to do.
Of course, yeah. And it was hip, too, and it was they thought it was righteous, I guess. It's just insofar as their warped little minds could express. It's typical. It's typical. And learning. That
oh,
this,
these Jews.
This little creep, yes. Oh, these Jews. This little imp of a creature was involved with the Obama operation. It came to no surprise. It really didn't. And, okay, so we were talking about memes before you got cut off there, Kyle. I have an idea I came up with a while ago. I haven't released it yet, but you like me to talk about it for now or what?
Oh, definitely.
Okay, here's an idea. You know, you get those Twitter hashtags or whatever. I don't know how to phrase it. I don't know the best way to phrase it. Maybe Horace or you, Kyle, could come up with the best way. But say no to race mixing, something along those lines. And it's really all it is. It's just a picture of an embracing and genuine white couple, you know, embracing. And what would be even better is if they were flanked by a bunch of smiling children of theirs. Now, there's, people are kind of scared of getting involved in and whatever, but if you keep it to the confines of Facebook or whatever, or Twitter, like I said, the hashtags, maybe that could be powerful enough to really spread the message in a really different way. Because there's no hate speech. This can never be misconstrued as hate speech. I mean, if you use the word race mixing, it might be. But if you avoid that word and you simply just show an embracing couple and sort of just put that message out there. It's like, no, we're going to keep it white. I think that could make some sort of take some sort of effect and maybe turn some heads. Yep. Yeah.
That's eugenics for you. Just encouraging young white couples to have some children. That's eugenics right there.
Yes,
that's
indeed.
Improving the gene
and,
pool.
I'd like,
especially if they're
yes.
quality individuals.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And people who would have the guts and the will and to do so would certainly be nice enough looking, at least, to really put themselves out there. And I know there's people out there willing and waiting to do something like that. And if you want to be and that's the only thing you do in your whole life to be active, then I would be happy about that, because it's a beautiful thing to me, seeing these people day and out, these nice happy white couples, and it's just like I'm fighting, and some of them are so unaware, and if they were aware, they'd be so ungrateful. You know, I don't care anymore. It's like I'll fight for them. It's just they'll be ungrateful for now. They'll be ignorant and really, quite frankly, pretty stupid for now. But in the future, they won't be. So it's about the race in general. We're talking about the race. It's a very epic thing. It's a all inclusive thing almost. We're again talking about eugenics. So it's a multifaceted topic, and a meme like this, I think, would bring all these things to the forefront in a very fast way. That's just my idea. I don't know what people think about it.
I think it's a good one. I there are already a few different Facebook fan pages out there that are pretty much doing this same thing. There's This Is Europa, and then there's kind of sister sites of sorts where it'll be This is Ireland or This is Norway.
Right.
So this is amazing. I love this. And then kind of the overarching largest one is This is Europa. And they're always
yep.
portraying the beauty of our civilization, our structures, our paintings, our people. Yep. There's also Nordic Beauty on Facebook.
Well, that's the Tumblr is my homepage.
They've been shut down before,
yes.
too. But they keep going, and they're still putting out there. It was hate speech to showcase
yeah.
the beauty of Nordic
yeah.
people. Because
hey.
Oh, why aren't you showing droids?
Yeah.
Because they're not Nordic.
Hey, Kyle, it's also albeit these videos have like a swastika or two in it, but these videos are simply just a song. Recorded off the radio or an old record from the Third Reich era. Just music is hate speech, which has nothing to do with fighting the enemy or anything. It's just these like wholesome songs. The one in particular I'm thinking of is Die Funkeli, the song of the radio man. It's translated like that to some extent, some way. It's this innocent little song, and it's talking about these beautiful girls listening, and you know, and that's it. It's nothing about Jews, nothing about the Soviets. It's just a song from that period, and it's hate speech. So this is the hubris. This is the modus operandi of the sordid, disgusting, filthy Jew, which just says simply, our culture is hate speech. Our mere being is a blight upon the world. But let me tell you, there's only one group of people I could say is truly a blight on the world, and that's them.
Yeah.
To even have the gall to say such. It's disgusting. And what's even sadder is that many white people, like we were discussing before, think this is just grand and openly and actively see about the destruction of the white race. And they think, oh, abortion's great, and you know, we'll help the weather underground and the Trotskyite party and the campus faggot party or whatever. It's ridiculous. Like the anti-white whites are the biggest joke. Maybe not a joke, because that's taking it a little lightly. They're the biggest threat to us. I mean, they are working against us actively, and some of them smile and embrace it at the same time. It's disgusting.
Yeah, it's absolutely incredible the amount of anti-white people out there and anti-white policies. For example, the White Man March video, along with a few others, It was blocked in another number of countries. Here's a little legal a notice I got from YouTube talking about a legal complaint that led to the video being blocked in a bunch of different countries. This is just one example here. I've never even heard of this one. Mayotte. There's Reunion, Germany, yes. Israel, French Guiana, Switzerland, Czech Republic, Martinique, Italy, St. Pierre and Miquelon, Poland, French Southern Territories, France, Austria, French Polynesia, Guadeloupe, Wallace and Futuna, and New Caledonia. So I guess they can't know about the White Man March on YouTube, but they can go over and watch Kim Kardashian naked humping Kanye West on a motorcycle, which was on the front page of YouTube, the general YouTube promotion page for some time. At least it was good to see that people en masse were flagging the video down.
Yeah.
I clicked on that. I said, what is going on here? And I guess this caused a bit of a stir. And although Kim Kardashian is not white, she is seen as white by white girls around the world. And that is sending an interesting message to them.
Yes.
But yeah, that's perfectly acceptable to see. But they don't want you knowing about the White Man March.
Right. And if I may lead into something else here, it's all related, but I just wanted to say, Kyle, before we end this, whenever that is, I really don't like to talk about division and fighting, and although it does call for it, and we are going to be white men, I have to accept it, because it's just going to happen no matter what I do. When you say that's all we need, only infighting will help us, or something weird, like strange like that, you really don't know what you're talking about, because if you did, if you knew the history of the white man, then you'd be working tirelessly to unite the white people, because, well, we've been disunited for hundreds, if not thousands of years, and over that course of history, there's been more and more things to be divided about. At first, it wasn't much. It was just tribal lines. Then came the Abrahamic faiths, which really divided. Obviously, really just Christianity, but then Christianity itself became divided, and of course, all the empires before that, even, and then after that, and then the ethnicities themselves being divided. The German nation itself so divided along state lines, along cultural lines of various different types of Germans, if you will, and then the North being the more Protestant portion of the ethnicity in Prussia and in Saxony, and then in the South part of it in Austria, all Catholic. So there's a lot of division there. It's just when you really think about the division within our race that's been had, it's really appalling to think that more division would help us in light of the racial awakening, the unity yet to be that is there yet needs to be expressed in a revolutionary way. And
yep.
And we're working towards that right now. And I think it's beautiful. And it's a glorious thing. And I'm happy to be here at this time. I really am.
Now, I want to try to get specific with you, if possible. Are you referencing at least the strategy that was outlined in Severus Niffelsen's blog, Divide and Conquer, Strength and Division? I believe you had a show with him on Truth Militia.
Yes.
And that was that was very good. But this is something that Bill has brought up. And I kind of see where they're coming from, but it's I think it should be obvious to people out there listening. And maybe I do get do get caught into the trap of stupid fighting, but
yeah.
It should be obvious that we are seeking to at least instill a larger racial thinking in people where they can see beyond certain divisions that have been artificially constructed for
yeah.
them.
Yeah, well, some of them are never going to leave some of their minds. I mean, I can't say never, but they're very powerful, and they're almost never going to put them aside for the sake of the race, which is very sad. And I think the unity of our race, it's going to happen with my generation because it's just the older Europeans have their national baggage where they'll have contempt for so-and-so for this event,
right.
whereas young people, a generation below them or two below them, they'll not even think of that. They'll acknowledge that, and they'll think it's very important because they themselves are nationalistic, and everything affecting their nation is important. But then there's the very real problem of the Jew and the open borders. So they put that aside. Now, when you come to America, it's like this is a nation that was, again, built upon the freedom to do as you please and carve out your own destiny. Nowadays, we have no destiny if we don't band together racially. So we have to put aside things. It's just, I mean, I have my own qualms and my own philosophy, so I'm not going to get along with everybody, whereas many other people would and have their own communities. We need to have some sort of platform where we can sort out that and
mm-hmm.
see what kind of communities we can build. Because, I mean,
right.
we're not going to have a healthy society where it's Christians thinking everything in the Bible is true, and then instilling that, and if they have the power, say, instilling that upon the population, then you have another civil war on your hands. So
yeah.
that's not healthy. We have to be mature about these things and discuss them openly before we have a revolution launched, and then have to deal with the fallout, which will be arguably worse because then it'll be white suicide on a grand level, and we don't want that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a very interesting challenge we have. Okay, so the cat or the cats have been let out of the bag or bags. The cats have been let out of the bags. I'd say that's what's taking place. And now some people are trying to herd the cats. Different cats are going and forming up with those cats over there. It's kind of chaotic right now. But I think this needs to happen, and once people have their own territory set aside, the cat fights will decrease.
Yes, yes, indeed. And you know, and speaking more about animals, I think we can. I really value what the caller Frank calls in with, and this is let me just make this distinction too. I was coming with this and wanted to talk about this on my last broadcast. We have white people, despite whatever they say the religion is. I think they're either innately Vonnegut-centric or Aesir-centric. When I say that, I'm talking about the Aesir and the Vonnegut, the dichotomy within the Nordic pantheon, where you have these more naturalistic, animal-geared gods, goddesses like Freyr, on the Vonnegut side. Then you have the Aesir, like Baldur and Tyr, and Voldanaz, these are you know, more Aryan, more masculine, patriarchal gods. And there's some individuals, despite their sex, are innately geared towards those things. And I think that's where a lot of the fighting really comes from. It really does. It depends upon your own innate worldview, which you cannot shake. I cannot shake the fact that I am just a natural-born anthropocentric, but I can see where people are coming from with the stray to defend animals and maybe go so far as to just not eat them at all. Maybe even have some sort of a diet, a religious doctrine where it's just they don't eat animals or something along those lines. I can understand those things. It's just it's just naturally I have to work on it to really begin to understand it, whereas other people, it's just natural to them, and it's just how they function in the planet and how they deal with the their surroundings. And I think that this dichotomy within world white diaspora is a very real thing, and this is where all of our infighting really does stem from, to be honest with you.
I want to make this a little bit more clear for the listeners who might not know so much about Norse mythology here. The Aesir are more of the sky-based, heavens-based gods and goddesses, whereas the Vanir are more of the earth-based, natural gods and goddesses of these planes here. And it's not necessarily so simple, but pretty much they were quarreling with each other for some time, but then they did come together to form the gods and goddesses of Asgard.
Yes, correct. And it's not like one is better than the other or something like that. I think it's a sort of clear distinction within our own race in general, and even the nations of our people
and the occupations of our people.
Yes, and that's another thing. The division of labor is something that hails up and creates societies and civilizations, and that's something it's a holy mission to find your niche in a society, in a civilization. That's a holy mission to me. I mean, all of this is a holy mission to me. This is a holy quest to help and save my race.
Siegfried, perhaps you are Atlas there. You've got the heavens on your shoulders and the earth at your feet there.
Hey, maybe. I've always felt close to Sigurd. You know, the blood and the sword, cutting up the dragon. I like the metal aesthetics and the brutal aesthetics. So, I'll stick with Sigurd.
All right. Hey, we have one person who wants to come on the call here through Skype. This is Sid, who will be taking over for Sieg. This coming Tuesday, and we'll be having some other wild card hosts coming on for as long as Siegfried is gone. But Sid is who will be doing this next Tuesday. And what I really like is that when somebody does step down for a while or whatever happens, people fill in. Step up to the plate, and oftentimes they do a great job. So just because Siegfried is leaving doesn't mean we'll be sad on Tuesdays. We'll have a little bit of sadness, but I really always love looking forward to what other people are able to contribute. I think it's fantastic seeing all sorts of different people, getting their voice on the radio. So here's Sid coming on.
Sid, you there?
He is. Sid.
Hey.
Hey.
Welcome.
Hey, guys. Great show so far. I just wanted to say, give me a second. My sound's messing up.
Turn off your stream.
Yeah, that's why.
Turn down your speakers.
Okay, I think we're okay.
All right. Sid, you want to say something?
Yeah, here we go. All right, sorry about that.
No worries.
About the whole movie idea, there's people who are, massive fans of some video games out there, like Half-Life 2 and DayZ and different things. And they'll have like a $200 budget, and they'll get up there and they'll make a short little 15-minute, 20-minute little movie, and they'll just use editing software and little things like that. And if you were watching this and you had no idea that this was this wasn't a Hollywood presentation, you'd think that it costed $1,000 or more to make this sort of thing. And, you know, I think in this day and age when we have everybody's just – their eyes are glued to a screen, and it's – you know, I'm guilty of this, of course. It's never really going to change. Before we have any sort of white resistance or revolution of any kind, even just a revolution of propaganda, not even one of violence, I think what would be the most effective thing is for people to actually see this happening in a movie, even in 10 parts, you know, 10 minutes long each, to see this happening and to watch it develop on a screen before then they can, okay, I identify with this character and I can do this too. Look at how this person did it. And, it's sort of the same feeling that people would get if they'd read something like the Turner Diaries or one of the Northwest novels by old Covington or whatever, but in a form that more people will be able to get into, because I think among our people, even now, the rate of, even though literacy is really high, the rate of people that actually, you know, actually read books for content is going down because our attention spans are going down. So that's just a point that I wanted to make right there. I felt that needed to be elaborated on a little further.
Yeah. Yeah. A good prop would stir your soul and uplift you and inspire you. Not simply just display some affinity with the local garbage culture like I've seen going on with all the movies and everything for a long time now. It's just, you know, putting in Facebook there, here and there. And you know, I can't even tell you how many times I heard the word Google in these TV shows and these movies. It's really astounding. So they prey upon people's the buzzwords to put forth a message and really keep you mired in their own corporate garbage. I mean, to really never inspire you or give you anything wholesome or beautiful to behold. It's always garbage. It's always garbage. And you know, that was very that was a great point there, Sid.
Sid, you wanted to talk about this idea of white unity as well, right?
Oh yeah. I think the beginnings of it are happening and have been happening for the past few months. I mean, I've been out on the internet for years and been racially aware, but not seen or found any networks that were dedicated purely to that, or any shows even hardly that were any good other than some of the old broadcasts done by Dr. Pierce about this sort of thing. And then all of a sudden, here in the last year or so, we've had Renegade spring up. You got Bob in D.C. that does his show. You got those guys. I don't even remember who they were called, but you had a guy on about a month or 2 months ago, and he's got his own little network, his own little group, and they're doing stuff out east. And it's starting because you have people from all these different networks that may have their own little circle and their own little group of people that follow them, but then one important figure goes on to another network, and then that person from that network goes on to another network, and that's the beginnings of networking. And just the fact that, you know, a guy like Kai Muros, who, I mean, is a fairly obscure figure, he's going out of his way to find shows like Renegade and other shows out there to reach out to those people and get on their shows. And, you know, you listen to him. That was one of the first things that brought me onto Renegade is I was somebody had uploaded your interview with Kai Muros onto YouTube. And that's when I first found out about Renegade. And I was like, whoa, you know, this is great. And he was truly, you know, you listen to the very end of it, he was truly grateful to have been on, and yet a prolific thinker like him, he could be a total elitist jerk if he wanted to, and Hens knows there's a lot of guys who are prolific thinkers who do kind of behave in that way, and been like, what is this, some internet radio show that some random guys have done? This doesn't have any real credence to it. There's no sense in me coming on there. But instead, he's very humble, very friendly, and then that's yeah. the kind of thing that amazed me about him, is I would not have expected a guy like that to have acted in that way, you know?
Well, the thing is that the prolific thinkers and writers have pretty much been ostracized and relegated to these realms. Yes, he's very generous and very humble indeed, but Kai Mouros has been banned from speaking at a number of different places, and they want to keep his voice very far from the mainstream, that's to be certain, because he's talking about racial unity. He's talking about what Norman Lowell talks about with Imperium Europa. It's something that's very, very powerful for us and very, very dangerous for our enemies.
Oh, yeah. But I guess what I'm trying to say is I used to see this a lot. I used to see a lot more, and it was a lot. It was really discouraging to me. I don't know if this you guys would agree with this, but it seems to me that it's changing, the whole attitude of a lot of racial thinkers out there, where they have their pet group, and
yeah.
they have their pet issues.
Yeah,
and these issues are kind of like hang-ups, you know? And they get hung up on this stuff, and it's like, okay, well, if you don't agree with this certain little, you know, thing, then you're basically, you might as well be the enemy.
Might as well be the Antichrist.
And I don't think that's how we should really be. Right. Now, for example, Renegade, you know, is in this is one of the reasons why I like Renegade, obviously, so it's not really a negative, but Renegade does come from a more anti-Christian sort of perspective, and I think that's a good thing, because I really don't think the whole Judeo-Christian thing is any good. But and you know, it might be kind of a bitter pill to swallow, but eventually, if the whole movement for the pro-white thing does really take off, we will be working together with, say, another network, which is, you know, almost entirely Christian, as long as they are pro-white first and Christian second, then there shouldn't be any problem there. You know what I mean? Or,
well, I won't go out of my way to attack people who are Christian and putting out good pro-white material, but that's not always the case with some of the other groups.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, some people just want to fight. They want the little infighting drama stuff. And with them, you really can't do anything, you know?
All your energy's wasted on this petty bickering instead of taking it to the enemy or taking it to your people. So taking the fight to your enemy and taking the propaganda to your people. We need to be recruiting, and part of the recruiting process is having success on your side, having proven things that work, different slogans, different things that make the news. We need these small successes to show people that we're out there, we're doing something, and keep the momentum going. Everyone out there, do whatever you can in the comment sections, in real life, with flyers, with banners, with signs. Whatever you do, keep the 14 words in mind. That's what I say for 2014. Yeah. Whatever you do, keep those 14 words in mind.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, please.
You know, we'll secure an existence for our people and a future for white children. But then, of course, there's 14 words after that, the second 14 words. And I wonder how many guys out there remember those. And that's so that the beauty of the Aryan woman does not perish from the earth.
Yep, 1414.
That's I think that's also essential to remember the second pair of 14.
I think the women can recognize, the real Aryan women out there who listen, who call in, who do shows, they also appreciate the second 14 as well.
Of course.
It's not just for the men. They realize that they were nursed at an Aryan woman's breast. They've realized that these are the beautiful creatures that birth future generations of men and women to continue our existence into the future. And though we are in peril, I think that the outright abuses and lies and disgusting anti-white propaganda that is put out there, I think that this is actually because it's being done to all white people in all the different lands, I think that this is actually what is going to cause us to come together and really become stronger than ever. This is what is going to cause the Imperium to coalesce, is an attack against us all simultaneously in similar fashions.
I mean, I couldn't believe it when I first started listening to Renegade. I was like, they actually have a women's show on here, hosted by women, racially aware women. And I know that some guys may have run into a lot more racially aware women than I have, but I've never met a single one, be it online or otherwise. You know,
yeah.
There's some out there, one or two, three or four here or there, but for me at least, it was always a thing where I just assumed that, and I guess it's still true, but that women just don't care about this sort of thing for the most part. But I was clearly wrong. And I've even seen a few ladies in the chat room, and I just think it's amazing. And it must be I think we should try to respect that, show some respect to them, especially, and just some gratefulness for them to be around. I'm not saying we have to be, you know, throwing ourselves at their feet or anything like that, but we should definitely make a concerted effort to make sure that they stick around when they do come around and not creep them out or whatever we might do.
Yeah, that's the last thing we should do. The last thing we should do is carry ourselves as gentlemen, because the enemy ideology, i.e. cultural Marxism, revels in the decrepit man, the man of the drug-addled brain, the wallowing in your own excrement, whether it be excrement in the in your deed or your words, and
or your thoughts. It starts
right,
in your mind.
Right. Yes. And you know, that's the, according to cultural Marxism, and the proprietors of that, you know, these filthy Jews, they love that. They love the uncouth man, being the representative of it. And so we can't be that. We can't combat degeneracy with more degeneracy. It's just, we're going to look like buffoons, and the no woman would want to be a part of that. No woman would want to be a part of that movement. And so there's some degree of standards required, but I am not one to dictate such. I think it's the goal and task of a elite, an open elite, not some shadow elite, to decide such. And I don't know when that'll be. I think that'll be very soon. It needs to be soon. If we're going to have some sort of political operation, because, I mean, frankly, this is, I was just discussing this today, my family, I mean, Obama's gone unopposed, okay? And the Republican Party has been set up to fail. Mike Sledge is completely right. And we were talking about Gregory Hood's article on Rand Paul and how Rand Paul has been really the linchpin, the head destructor of the Republican Party, and really any opposition to the multi-cult madness, i.e. the Democrat Party, which is the immigrant party, the Cultural Marxist Party, that they have no opposition right now. And you wonder why Obama is doing all these, rather the Obama administration, his handlers, or the controllers of this giant, vast country are getting away with all this. Well, they're running unopposed. They're running completely unopposed. You would think, well, we got to infiltrate the Republican Party. No, it's been destroyed. It's been destroyed a long time ago. And besides, I wouldn't want to be anything to do with the Party of Lincoln. It's ridiculous. Now, yeah.
Sieg, I actually wanted to get your take on political parties in the United States. You think it's a necessity, and at least that's my interpretation of what I've heard you say.
Sure.
But what do you think about the current situation? Really all that we have, and it's not completely explicit in their, I guess on their website, that they're for white people, but that is the case with everybody who's involved. It's the American Freedom Party
right.
in the United States. They're pretty much the only nationalist pro-white party that's out there. I kind of know some of the people involved, have spoken with them on the shows even.
Oh, yeah.
So that's what we have right now. They're doing some good work.
Yes, they are.
They were part of that. They at least provide the flyers for the distribution that went out outside of a Mandela screening, I think, on Christmas. And these guys up in Portland – they were there handing out these flyers about a genocide in South Africa outside of the Mandela movie. So I think that's great. So American Freedom Party was involved in that. Do you think that this could have at least some impact? Do you think it's something that some people could rally behind? What's your opinion on the current situation in the United States and perhaps what could develop in the future?
Well, I like the American Freedom Party, and I applaud what they've done with those examples and others. I really do. The thing is, it's just numbers. We need to inspire the white people in this country because there is no inspiration at all. I mean, everywhere they turn, they see decadence, they see debauchery and really the death of their whole culture and existence on this planet. So we really need to inspire them with sheer numbers, I think would really galvanize the entire race in general. If we can, and I've said this before, like taking all the parties that exist, if they are pro-white, they should disband and re-up into one gigantic pro-white beast that cannot be taken down. And numbers simply look powerful. I mean, we're going to put something out there. The Jew is united in their own goals, and to sidestep and coddle the constituents with these words like global elite or something, you know, it's just a ridiculous garbage. That means you have contempt for your own constituency where you can't even tell the truth, where you can't even be honest. And it will show them that we are not like the rest when we're honest and our words are not peppered with BS. And I'm no way saying the American Freedom Party. That's not what I'm saying about them at all. I'm just saying that we need simply unity. And I don't want to create a rift between anybody in saying this stuff. I just want to see my race saved. I don't want to pick a fight with any existing leaders out there. I'm not trying to pick some sort of fight with them and anger them and get them out of power. But if they're in it for money, if they're in it to just simply exist by the backs and the ideals and the salvation of our race, then they have absolutely no place in this race because they're not genuine to begin with. They're only in it for money. That's disgusting. And furthermore...
Speaking of which, I wanted to get your impression. If you've heard about the National Alliance basically being reformed by a few of the former members and getting a number of those people on board, and they're doing some kind of radio work. Do you hear about this?
No, I have not. This is new to me. And is this anything to do with Robert Ransdell?
No, I didn't see him directly involved. I don't have the story right here before me, but I'm glad to see that happening. So
yeah.
There was some, not necessarily trying to revive the dead horse, but just getting
right.
on a different horse called the New National Alliance or whatever
right.
it is.
And you know, just seeing at least some sort of open and publicized sort of dialogue between these people and really solidifying the 14 words as the apex, as the end goal of all of this, then I think that would be at least very positive for us alone, because it would show the enemy a degree of unity, because when they see disunity, they laugh at us. They laugh at us. We're currently the laughingstock of the entire planet, not just among the Jew, but among the Asians, because they are, I mean, the Asians are, no matter what time period you talk about, they are strictly united in some sort of state apparatus or religious apparatus where they could do things collectively as a unit. I love the fact that we haven't been that, but at the same time, we are such a small minority at this point, and even in this country, dwindling.
Wait.
And politically, we have the catalyst to be that united front, to save the race, at least in this country, and form relationships with parties that hold the 14 words as the forefront of their ideals as well, worldwide. If we have that dialogue as well, if we display this worldly condition, description of our people, you know, of our party, say, if we're worldly about it, because this is a world revolution, we don't want to make any mistake about that and just not make it about a nation. We are nationalistic in that sense, too, where we have our American whites at the forefront, but at the same time, we don't forget about the whites in South Africa and in France and in Germany and Russia and everywhere else. We are a worldwide force. This is a worldwide revolution. And I really don't know what else to say.
You know, I think that we're definitely going to be moving forward into a position where we have a whole lot of numbers who are trying to get behind some kind of united
yes.
force.
Yes.
And the good thing is that we have all of these different groups around, even though they might be bickering, at least there's all sorts of gossip, because there are plenty of people to talk about who are doing things.
Yeah.
And there are new people popping up all the time. Shannon had posted an article over at Alternative Social. It came out from the SPLC, and it was mentioning the massive amount of hate groups that now exist.
Yeah.
They're talking about the rise of their opposition. They're doing it so that they can get more funding and raise the alarm and all that. But what they're doing is actually reporting on something that is very real. The amount of groups out there that share our type of ideology is much larger than it was during the militia movement of the late 80s, early 90s.
Yes.
Hey guys, we're
in a different position right now. Yes, Sid.
We're talking about getting more people into the movement, getting more people behind pro-white unity. I think one of the biggest obstacles that we have right now to this people who may have racial inclinations coming out in support, either openly or, you know, hiding their power level, so to say, and doing it, is the retaliatory nature of having these sort of views.
Yes.
When, you know, I mean, a lot of people have had this happen to them at their jobs. And have they know that if they get found out that they could lose their finances, they could lose something that they hold precious or have repercussions, then they're going to be a lot more averse to doing that. What I think once we reach a critical mass, what we can actually do is form groups whose job is to do counter-retaliation. And I'm not talking anything violent.
Yes.
Okay?
Definitely.
I'm not talking anything violent at all. It's not necessary because the retaliation that they're doing upon us and our people in the first place isn't violent, so it's not necessary for us to retaliate with that sort of thing. All we have to do is get a few people together and say, you know, go around the community of this person, just like they did to Tim Wise,
uh-huh.
and get some flyers out there, get some, you know, say, look, they fired this guy, and his children are suffering, and blah, 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 and go on, and get their awareness out, and let people know that this kind of thing is happening, and, you know, maybe some minor pranks can be involved, just some little inconveniences that these counter-retaliatory type groups, and this ties into what Bob was talking about with the hard points and everything. You know, these are all legal, really, things that people could be doing to combat the retaliatory nature of the system when it comes to racial people. And I think that would be great.
I think that in 2014, the worst thing somebody could be labeled is an anti-white, because of the repercussions
yes.
of that. That's the way I'd like to see it. I'd like to see all sorts of people who have been spouting forth genocidal bullshit about my race, encouraging it, causing it, that it's been taking place. Anybody that's been doing that is going to be labeled an anti-white. And this is not a very good thing to be labeled in a country where whites still do barely make up the majority, because whites are becoming conscious, and whites don't take nobody takes kindly to being genocided. So all these people who have been acting with absolute immunity are going to be in for a rude awakening as they find themselves being labeled anti-white and all that comes along with that.
Got that right. I totally agree with that. Anti-white people must go. We must point them out, and we must make them the absolute pariah of all our societies, all of them, not just in America. I mean, America is the flashpoint. I really do believe America, among other key, not to diminish the importance of other European nations, but as far as sovereign states go, these false little Jewish hijacked entities like the Greek Republic and the United States of America, this so-called Federal Republic here on these shores, is a flashpoint. And I do believe that Europeans and whites worldwide are itching to see us do something in a very political, united way that would not only inspire them and their people, but inspire the rest of the white people here to actually do something who aren't already involved and will be involved. They will be.
Siegfried, I heard you talking about numbers before.
Yes.
And the need to show our numbers. Now, I wanted to take a few notes from our enemy's playbook here briefly. And I posted this over at whitemanmarch.com. I'm only going to read a small part of this here, but this is from Saul Alinsky's Rules for Radicals. And I think that this could be applied to our struggle. I don't want to emulate the Jews and their proxies, but there are some effective techniques that are expressed here. He says, first, the eyes. If you have organized a vast, mass-based people's organization, you parade it visibly before the enemy and openly show your power. Second, the ears. If your organization is small in numbers, then conceal the members in the dark, but raise a din in clamor. So if you don't have a whole lot, keep yourselves a little bit hidden, but make your voice heard.
Right.
Get your message out there. You don't need to be seen next to it, but raise up a clamor from the darkness. Third, the nose. If your organization is too tiny even for noise, stink up the place. And that's also very simple. That idea there. But that's what we need to have happen, is that no matter what your size is out there, whatever kind of organization you're involved in, there's something you can be doing.
Absolutely.
To affect
Absolutely.
A great deal of even discomfort on your enemy's part, even if that's what it is, you're sticking up the tree here.
Absolutely.
I think people, especially white people, they may find out about some of this information, and then they, you know, something that goes along with that is the sudden and overwhelming feeling that they have a responsibility now to do something about whatever information it is they've learned, be it whether they've just barely gotten in and they know about 9/11 and that's it, or, you know, they've gone way beyond that. A lot of this information has a responsibility that goes along with it that many of the people that learn it feel when they really fully hits them. And, you know, they can do very simple things. You know, you could easily print up some very small, business card size things on one sheet of paper. You could have like 12 of them to a sheet of paper, and you could go to your local library and you could just stealthily, you know, find some of the most commonly checked out books, or just go through and every third or fourth book, just stick one in it. And nobody would notice you while you're doing this. You know, it's not like you're raising a clamor or anything like that. Okay. And once you've done that, you can go out and you can stick stuff up on telephone poles, you know,
right.
If you live in a city, obviously this would be the best thing to do. If you live in a largely white area, you could easily do something very simple like that once a month, you know, and then eventually, you know, if that's all the time you have, and you'd canvas a massive area, and it'd be hilarious to see, you know, somebody do this for Renegade Broadcasting or any of the groups out there that are doing something positive. And then later you might find someone in a chat room or something and be like, well, how'd you find out about this? Well, I opened up a book and there was just this thing stuck in it, you know. And if enough people are doing that, that will eventually happen.
You know, I think also maybe bringing out the old soapbox. Get an old ivory soapbox. You can stand on your ivory tower there and preach. You know, let people hear what you have to say, but especially film it. Because even if only a few people show up for the actual event, the digital repercussions could be huge.
Oh, yeah. That's like the guy that dressed up in the Elmo costume and went to New York Central Park and just started screaming about the Jews.
Well,
I mean, he could have done that a little better.
That guy was a scumbag. No, that guy had been involved in some really
bad
stuff down in Brazil.
I don't know about it. I just saw the video, which goes to show.
I heard he was a Jew.
yeah, he was. He had officially renamed himself Adam Sandler. But, guys, we've kind of run out of time here. I wanted to make sure I wrap this show up properly without just getting, you know, cut off here.
Right.
Sid, thanks for calling in. We'll hear from you on Tuesday. Appreciate your input.
All right. Thanks, guys.
All right. Great. Siegfried, thanks for everything you've done, everything you will do. We didn't get to everything I wanted to cover tonight, but people need to go to renegadebroadcasting.com/Siegfried and check out all of his shows if you have not already. I hope you come back soon, and I hope you come back to Renegade. And there'll always be a slot for you if you so choose.
Excellent. Thank you so much, Kyle, for everything, and thank you for the opportunity. And thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for listening. I wouldn't be doing this without you. So thanks.
Great. Well, I'm going to go out with a little bit of music here. And, again, I really enjoyed the conversation tonight. So, Siegfried, really, it's been amazing getting to meet you in person and do all of this together. Really, folks, let Siegfried know you are thankful for the hard work he's done and all the other hosts here at RenegadeBroadcasting.com. Check them out and let them know that you appreciate what they're doing. And hopefully you have a little bit of extra change to donate to some banners that will be going out across the white world here.
Yes, indeed.